Good morning. It is Friday, May the 8th. Joining us for a remote talk shop this morning is Brian and Chief Sean Robertson from Humboldt Bay Fire.
Good morning, Mr. Sean.
Good morning.
Welcome to our new reality. Let's talk about our old reality, okay? Let's get that taken care of.
All right. Since the fire department has a fireboat, this one's kind of relevant. Port. What is the reason we call the left side of a vessel the port side?
I'm going to just fly off the seat of my pants here and say that traditionally you would approach a port from a particular side of your vessel, and that became known as the port side.
Oh, I was thinking that's where all the good wine was, on that side of the boat.
Sean gets half credit. He was on the right track. The steering oars for ancient sailing vessels were on the right side of the ship. The opposite, or left side, was therefore the side laid up against the dock for unloading. This side was nearest the port, and if necessary, it had in it a cargo port or opening.
Okay, so that part of the, so you can get access to it. Yeah. Okay, cool. What other useless trivia do you almost know about, Sean?
quite a bit. I think that was my most successful answer so far.
Good deal.
Yeah.
So how have things changed at the fire department here the last little bit? You guys kind of settling into routines now?
Yes, I'd say in the last 2 to 3 weeks, things seem a bit more routine, as you said. No big changes, no new exposures. Once we changed our PPE model, I think a month ago, to increase our protection, we did have that initial scare with 7 people exposed. 3 were quarantined for 2 weeks. All 3 of those were tested and were negative. And since then, we've just had a couple of people develop symptoms like fever and difficulty breathing and a cough, but they were all tested and were also negative, so that's been good.
So when those happen and then the tests occur, what are they finding out that it is? Is it just another flu that's going around?
Yeah, it's usually just a flu. I think one person's child had an ear infection, and that somehow got them sick. So just the usual things that we get sick from.
Yeah, just normal stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and then in the midst of that, we've had a bunch of fires, structure fires. So just normal.
Yeah, I was gonna ask about the fire that kind of got you guys' attention this past weekend. It seemed like it was a little bit more significant than the run-of-the-mill fire.
Yeah, it's pretty unusual for a weekend fire where people are at home to develop that significantly in such a short amount of time. Because I think we were there within 4 minutes and started a quick aggressive attack is our norm, but it got up into the attic and started to look pretty dangerous.
Is that because of the construction design of the structure, or because of the contents that were in the attic?
Probably a bit of both. I believe there was I don't think there was hoarding conditions, but there was enough material inside to accelerate the fire quickly. And I think there's usually a delay in notification. A bystander said they saw the people running in and out a few times. And so that delay will just make things more significant.
Right. I'd never thought that the contents of an attic could either accelerate a fire. yes, on the other side, it could dampen the...
Yeah, I think it was more the contents inside the regular living area accelerated things. But once it gets in the attic, there's different ways it can be fed air to make it move around. And if it's stuck in a void space that's hard for us to access, it'll just start running around doing that. So it's often the case of getting good access to put water on it.
With some of the venting that goes on in attic space, I would think that there's a kind of another variable that's put into the equation there. I'm thinking about attics, which you guys probably do on a pretty regular basis. What about the venting in attic spaces? Is that a compounding factor, or at least something that needs to be allowed for?
What is important to note for us about that is if it is in the attic and it's just starting to build, we will know certain things from the color and volume and density of the smoke. So the placement of regular vents does have an effect, especially if you have a good strong wind, like we often do have that prevailing northwesterly wind. If the house is lined up to really take that in at a certain intake, like a regular gable vent, I've seen that really accelerate the growth. And then some of the newer houses have a ridge vent. We've seen some bizarre things from that. And in the last few years, what's called flow path or fire dynamics has become a big part of firefighter knowledge, and just having a better understanding of how airflow through the building affects the fire. And this whole development of knowledge came from wind-driven fires in high-rise buildings in New York City. After NIOSH did a fatality fire where several firefighters died, and they tried to recreate the conditions. And they found that, a window open into a specific hallway with another opening somewhere else creates that chimney effect and just really accelerates everything. And as the firefighters, if they're not aware of that airflow, you can get easily trapped in it. So that's definitely become a bigger aspect of how we fight fires these days, is just understanding how it works.
Kind of sizing up the facility as you arrive. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are Easy Radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy Radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:23. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt Bay Fire Chief Sean Robertson. Sean, looking at some of the different challenges that are out there, you've got the enhanced medical concerns that are in place. I know you guys get a fair percentage of, let's call them, peripheral medical request calls.
Right.
As the composition of your calls for service changed at all during this last 2 months?
It has. Especially initially, a lot of our calls are, as you said, medical periphery. So what's called lift assists or good intent calls. So when there's no real significant medical emergency, but people either have a problem or they need us to help them off the floor, we've often done that at nursing facilities and other care homes. And we definitely saw those decrease. I think as a combination of people being aware of it and us being less willing to do those things because of the increased risk, and also people being more home, so able to get aid in other ways or not needing it. So that was definitely a change. Another interesting thing is we go to a lot of what I said was good intent calls. So it kind of borders onto a false alarms, where we get dispatched to an emergency, we show up and it turns to be something else. Or somebody thinks they're having an emergency, we get there and it's definitely not that. And it can also include smoke alarm calls, or people think they have a fire and they don't. So just a lot of changes that way. And I think a lot of it is just because people are in their homes more.
Oh, so it's not that things are really changing, it's just that there are being a higher degree of observation of what's occurring.
Yeah, and I think for a while, and again, all of this is completely speculative, I think people were much more wary of being careful, of taking care of basic things. A lot of our calls are because people are just making bad choices and not being careful with things. And I've seen in the last couple of weeks, as things feel like they've relaxed, that our call volume is going back to normal.
Okay. Well, so it's more predictable now of what the types of calls are, rather than some of the goofy stuff that's kind of coming out of thin air.
Yeah, so and another big part of the medical aspect is, when we show up and everybody's masked and gowned, and we're really communicating more with the patients and saying, do you really need to go to the hospital? Because unless it's really significant, you're going to be a pretty low priority in the ER. And just doing a lot more screening and an attempt to help them deal with what's going on.
What about the masks? There's been an awful lot of reference to the different types of masks and different styles of masks that are out there. You guys are certainly the aces when it comes to breathing apparatus. You get probably in painters or maybe people that play with resin a little bit. What are the differences?
It's really the filtration. So the difference between the surgical mask or even what the dust mask and then an N95 is just the construction of it and what materials they're used for filtration. And it's just the tighter weave, so to speak, of the different materials is what makes them more expensive and more are difficult to wear because they're not as breathable, because all of that air that you're breathing out just gets recirculated back. So you go from, the fabric coverings that everybody has, what those are really just stopping is some of the droplets. So it's at capturing larger droplets, if you like, or larger organisms, where the other extreme is our self-contained breathing apparatus, where it's a totally closed system, and there is an exhaust port, but it just relieves some of the moisture in the system, so it's really blocking as much of it as you can. So those are the
extremes. How long does it take a firefighter to get used to the breathing apparatus? Is that something that's pretty easy to adjust to, or is that something that takes a little bit of time before it normalizes for the troops as they're needing to use them?
It definitely takes some time. I mean, just getting used to having that face shield on, it's affecting everything, every sense you have, your visual, your audible, the ability to speak is very different. And you just have to get kind of comfortable wearing that for a prolonged period of time. And often when we're wearing those your level of physical activity is very high, and so you have to even change your breathing and moderate your effort so that you can maximize your use of the air. And so when we get into wearing the N95 masks, it's obviously a lot less cumbersome, but we just become more accustomed to that. And a lot of people can be claustrophobic, and certainly some firefighters will have that situation too, but through training, they're able to overcome that.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
Hi, this is Brian Papstein. This afternoon, Humboldt County Health Officer Teresa Fankovic is having a press conference and will be announcing the formalization of our current practices, formerly referenced as shelter in place. What does this mean? How does it impact you? Find out as we will be talking with Humboldt County Sheriff Billy Hansel this afternoon. Stay tuned here in the 4 o'clock hour. You'll be able to hear that interview in its entirety, and we'll have it on our website later this afternoon.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt Bay Fire Chief, Mr. Sean Robertson. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, and Murphy's Markets. Sean, with when the troops are out going around, either going from station to station, on calls, things of that nature, how much easier is it for them now with the lower levels of traffic that are out there? Have you seen a change in response time? Are the guys saying there are less goofballs out there that they have to worry about? Is there responding to a call? How's it been in the service delivery part of the process?
I think it's definitely had an effect. There's, like you said, a lot less traffic. It's the data I've got is more anecdotal, and like you said, a lot less people out there, so just able to quickly and more smoothly get to the incidents. What that probably translates to is slightly shorter response times, but they're probably driving slower because they're able to take less risks in getting to the calls.
What are you hearing from your buddy? Go ahead. I was just wondering, what are you hearing from the other fire chiefs? Are the experiences that you've been seeing with the changes in the response time, the changes in the traffic flow, the changes in the types of responses, is that something that all fire departments are experiencing, either locally or throughout the state, or is it something that's a little unique to our area because of the rural nature?
I think it's a bit of both. Most of the other agencies around Humboldt Bay and even in the whole county definitely have seen a decrease in calls because more people are at home. Like I said, initially taking a bit more care of their daily lives, but also dealing with the difficulties of the increased PPE and then just the concern with the virus. Nationwide, it really depends. I think some of the biggest cities have dealt with very different situations where they have a lot more of the COVID patients, and that's obviously a much greater issue because just on a logistical protective front, every call would require a significant amount of decon and documentation. And then a reset. So those agencies are having to deal with that, multiple times a day, where they're having multiple or thousands of deaths over the last few months. So just a wide variety of things. But locally, it seems like the other agencies are dealing with similar things too.
Yeah, I would think the folks like in New York City or Chicago that are wearing the badge and running with the hoses, that's a whole different dynamic than what, even L.A., what, they've only had 1,000 positive tests Let alone some of the more rural ones. We don't have quite the same level of risk, I guess would be the simplest way to say it.
Yeah, a few other agencies have created COVID response teams. So they will have units dedicated to only respond to COVID incidents. And it's a voluntary assignment. So it's generally younger firefighters without families that have signed up for that. And all they go on every day is a real COVID positive incident. They have special PPE. They look like they're a hazmat team. So it's just an interesting dynamic.
So they show up with their moon suits and the whole nine yards, huh?
Yep. They have very
specific. The training for those folks, I mean, you guys have got a fair amount of medical anyway, and you've got the maintenance of those skill sets. Are those transferable for this situation, or is there additional training that is also needed?
So the two elements that are very aligned from my perspective is, one, we deal with infectious disease control all the time. We have protocols for that. But those are pretty uncommon, hepatitis, generally B and C, tuberculosis, things like that are what we prepare for. But they're pretty uncommon, so it's not a daily occurrence. The other element is a hazmat response. Again, we're trying to mitigate exposure, so time, distance, and shielding are the terms we use to do that. And so those two things have now become a daily occurrence because it's the really difficult thing is it's unknown what the actual hazard risk is, so we assume the worst. So every call the guys are going on, they're assuming there's that threat of exposure, and that's why we're wearing that enhanced PPE to mitigate that. But it's definitely changed that risk assessment reference point is the biggest thing.
Are there certain visual cues that the guys are looking for also, or is it just prepare and be prepared and that's the way you roll?
I think they're just looking for those general signs and symptoms. We start with the three basics of a fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. They're pretty used to making assessments for difficulty breathing. And then just, what somebody looks like who might have a fever and a cough, or they're going to be looking for that. I think the other visual assessment they're doing is just minimizing their exposure and then being able to take care of the patient as much as possible. Those are all the visible things I think they're looking at.
That would make sense. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:42.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Sean Robinson. Sean, if we can kind of move away a little bit from the medical side and look more towards the fire prevention side. One of the things I think that's been kind of sad is this year we've had such a tremendous spring weather-wise. Now, it would normally be a huge boon, and we'd have more folks here and more often spending more money and all that kind of stuff, which we haven't been able to take advantage of this year or experience. What are you seeing as this summer? Is this going to be a dry summer, or are you anticipating we're going to be okay? Haven't heard anything about droughts or anything along those lines. What kind of summer are we looking at?
The projections, especially through CAL FIRE, is we've seen a lot of growth through the spring, but we're already seeing pretty dry fuel moistures. And so they're expecting another hot and dry summer. We didn't have a very significant fire season last year in terms of acres burned. So a lot of fuel is out there. We're already seeing fires breaking out south and in the valley. And even here in southern Humboldt, there was a four-acre fire, I think 2 weeks ago, just near Ruth Lake. That was caused by lightning, and that burned 4 acres up pretty quickly overnight. So it's definitely the projections and thoughts are that we're going to have a very busy, challenging fire season.
Preventable, or is it going to be driven pretty much by storm fronts coming through?
It's hard to say. I think preventable is always the goal. If people take care of their homes, maintain their protective clearing area around. A lot of the studies from the Paradise and other fires are showing that what's planted right next to your house, so your decorative garden, can have a much greater effect on fire spread than was previously thought. And then covering openings, moving any combustibles away, those things we're accustomed to, but really paying attention to what plants are right near your house that can spread the fire. But then the other things, like you said, are going to be weather-driven. It's always those dry thunders and lightning storms, and then the wind is, you know, what we're concerned about, but ultimately a lot of the fires we've had have been human-caused. And as we all know, the controversy with PG&E, they've put a lot of work into vegetation management and maintenance of their lines, so we're hoping that we don't have that element again. But I think everybody, at least in the fire service, is prepared to make a very quick and massive deployment of resources on any fires so that we can stop them from getting bigger, because if they get into those bigger campaign fires, we have that real challenge with the COVID element that would be better just to not even deal with.
Yeah, jump on it and jump on it hard, quickly.
That'd
be kind of nice if we didn't have any of those big fires this year. It's been a number of years since we've been able to say that. All right, bud, we'll have a calm weekend, huh?
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
It has been busy. You too. I hope you feel better.
There you go. Yeah, thank you very much. Happy Mother's Day, everybody. See you on Monday.